welcome to We the People. In India's largest state of Uttar Pradesh, a girl from a low-caste community was gang-raped by four upper-caste men from the same village. Her spine was broken, her tongue cut as they dragged her from the fields she was working in, raped and tried to strangle her to death. She died 2 weeks later in a hospital, giving a statement about her rape and torture. But will she get justice? Since then, it seems that the whole state machinery has been working overtime on the job to cover up this crime. To protect whom? Even today, while opposition leaders were lathi charged and prevented from meeting her family, a huge congregation of upper caste men were allowed to meet under the eye of the very same UP police, a congregation at which slogans of justice for the accused were raised. The horror of the Hathras case and the way that it has been mishandled, one string of lapses after the other, unintentional or otherwise, is a mirror to what it is like for thousands of women who are subjected to heinous crimes like this on a daily basis in India. One rape occurs every 15 minutes in India. One woman is gang raped and murdered every 30 hours. One woman killed for dowry every 72 minutes. One acid attack almost every 2 days. One woman trafficked every 5 hours, and a woman faces a rape attempt every 3 hours. And every 6 minutes, an attempt is made to outrage a woman's modesty. Yet we have extremely low conviction rates when it comes to crimes against women. And we're here today to try and piece together the puzzle of why that is the case. What are the loopholes in policing that have led to an increase in crimes against women? Who was at fault here in this case? Is it the judiciary, the law, the media that refuses to draw a line? Or all of us, we the people, society, we are indifferent, yet we're intrusive. Such repeated incidents are a failure of the policing in our country, in our nation, a nation that's supposed to be governed by the rule of law, and of our criminal justice system. Joining us on the show, we have Dr. Vikram Singh. He's a former DGP of UP. From the BJP, we have Lalitha Kumaramangalam. She's the former chairperson of National Commission for Women. We have Justice Rajiv Bhalla, former judge from the Punjab and Haryana High Courts. We have Nandita Rao, advocate. And we have Sunita Krishnan, a rape survivor turned activist. Gang raped by 8 men at the age of 15, she now runs an institution that helps trafficked women find shelter. Vikram Singh, to you first. There have been a string of lapses. The UP police has committed egregious errors in the Hathras rape case, from basic insensitivity to blatant cover-ups, attempts at cover-ups. This is a classic example of how not to handle a case like this. As a former DGP of UP, how do you explain this?
I would say that you put it very appropriately, how not to do a thing. This could go in the case histories of the National Police Academy and all police training institutions, how not to handle such sensitive cases. To begin with, there were serial lapses, non-registration of the FIR, disbelief in the family and the complainants, not taking the matter seriously, taking it in a very cavalier manner, then rushing the victim and rushing the deceased to the hospital very late in installments. Hathras, Aligarh, Delhi. Then recording the dying declaration very late. And last but not the least, the medical examination on which all reliance could be based was done after 8 days. Then the howler of howlers...
Dr. Singh, we know all this. We've heard this story over and over again. This is what it's like on the ground. But we want you. You're an insider. You've been the former DGP of UP. You tell us, why is this happening? Is it because the police actually believe that, you know, they're not supposed to provide justice to the family, but they're responsible to the state, to the administration, to make sure that, you know, law and order is all is well in the state of UP, for example?
All is not well. And I said before that nothing is like a neutral gear in the police. Either you get a reward or you get punished for not doing what expected to do. How many cases of 166A of the Indian Penal Code have been taken and policemen dismissed from service for not doing for what they are paid to do? Not one. How many police officers have lost out on the promotions and punished for not registering FIRs and not doing what they were expected to do? How many cases with the conviction rate being 27%, and that is on the recorded number of rapes, not on all the rapes, but the recorded number, if the conviction rate continues to be even after the Nirbhaya case at 27%, how many prosecutors punished? How many investigators punished? Figure is zero. You are sowing a wind and preparing to reap a whirlwind with this kind of an environment and ecosystem where there is no punishment for the guilty police officers. This was bound to happen, and we are quoting the recipe of disaster. I would like to speak on behalf of the police, but there is nothing positive, encouraging or reassuring from their conduct on which I would like to speak and say that, yes, they stood like a ton of bricks and helped out the victim. I do not know.
So quickly, so I want to just push you a little more on this. Five police officers were suspended, lower level police officers were suspended as the Aditya Nath government, you know, rushed to do some damage control. Would you say, you've been an insider again, that they were acting on their own, or do the orders come from above?
Let me tell you, this came too late. The punishment has to be like a whiplash, and whiplash comes down immediately. The moment I get the notice, something like a prima facie evidence. And you don't have to tell me, an SIT will tell me whether I have 2 years or 4 years. FIR was not registered, the suspension should have happened immediately. And I would also say that the DM also needs to be placed under suspension because he was complicit and a willing accessory to the whole atrocity that happened. And to say that all this happened suo moto at the level of Hathras, I'm not prepared to believe that.
All right, let's bring in other layers. Justice Rajiv Bhalla, this family has been let down at so many levels. Yes, the Allahabad High Court has summoned the top UP officials, but that's on the October 12th. That's over a week away.
Good evening. I would not like to speak particularly with respect to the case because the matter is not taken up by the Allahabad High Court. But there is this, you see, I take a sentence from what you said. You started with saying who is responsible. Is it the judiciary? Is it the police? Is it the administration? I would just like to say, I think we are all responsible. This pandemic of rapes, molestation, abuse, has been going on for a long time. And then we have a catharsis of chest beating every 2 months, and then we lapse into indifference until the next TRP case comes up.
Correct.
So the solution here, as far as I probably would represent the judicial angle to this entire thing, the matter is now before the Allahabad High Court. And my experience as a judge, as a lawyer, has always been that about 20% of cases which involve atrocities on women, whether it's rapes, whether it's harassment, reach the police station. And about 10% eventually come before the courts. And out of these 10%, with due deference to the gentleman representing the police or who was in police, the investigation is abysmal. And what Correct. We get is something which, if a normal one would acquit in a minute. Courts, if you would see criminal jurisprudence over the last 20 or 30 years, starting from the Supreme Court to the High Court to everybody, we've spent more time coining theories of jurisprudence, which probably 50 years ago would be horrified at trying to. If you remember, the Supreme Court itself started the sole statement of a person who's been raped is enough.
Yes.
Now, if we have all that, I just don't understand. You have medical evidence and unimpeachable medical evidence. You have the statement of the person. Unfortunately, in this case, the person is no more. That's a different part. I would not like to comment on that. So why do things keep vacillating? And then
let me ask you, Justice, yes. Is the statement in hospital, the last statement made, a dying declaration? Is it legally admissible?
Yes, if it's before a magistrate.
Which it was in
recorded,
this case.
As per the guidelines set down by the Supreme Court as well as by the Evidence Act, it is admissible in evidence. The only problem arises is that lots of times there are lots of vested interests that intervene. And what eventually comes to the court is something which is watered down or filtered down. And eventually, courts keep on coining various theories of jurisprudence to convict people.
Correct.
That's unfortunate. That's very unfortunate. I think the whole thing has to go to policing and to attitude of society. Now, we talk about society. The judges blame the police blame the judges. We blame the media, everybody. But we are all in it together. And don't you think it's time to change attitudes? And attitudes, okay. Whose attitudes? Your attitude, my attitude, all of us. This misogyny that we go through is the basic reason for all this.
All right. We're all in this together. Let me remind our panelists, we want to try and piece together a puzzle of why we have such low conviction rates. So Nandita Rao, this family, it's been denied basic rights at multiple levels. Is there any one point that you could, that stands up to you that was particularly horrific? I mean, for example, the fact that first they have been denied legal aid. Legal advice at a time when they're under tremendous pressure. They've been asked to take decisions, reportedly been made to sign papers. If you don't get legal aid at the start, it pretty much means it's an open and shut case for the opposition here.
I think the speakers before me have already highlighted the absolutely horrific and abysmal journey of this case till the death and forced, burning of this young girl's body. But what about the SIT, the so-called SIT, which was the, rectification measure by the state government? The first decision that it takes is that we will subject the family of this girl to narco analysis. On what basis? First of all, the Supreme Court has said narco analysis is not a reliable form of investigation.
Correct.
Secondly, the complainant cannot be put at par with an accused, and it is nobody's case that the complainants are lying. Thirdly, as the Honorable Judge just said, there is a dying declaration of the girl that these people raped me and strangled me, and none of her family members say they were eyewitnesses to this incident. And her body was contemporaneously bought. It's not just that it's a case of rape. Her spine has been broken. There was an attempt to kill her. So what kind of special investigation team is this that they say that we will subject the complainant to narco analysis? This and after hearing this, the Honorable Allahabad High Court, we were all so heartened that, the Honorable Allahabad High Court has passed a very good order issuing suo moto notice saying, did the police act the way it did? Because this girl belongs to a weaker section of society and they have hit the nail on the head. But then giving them such a long rope, keeping the matter on 12th of October, and in the meantime, this mischievous actions are being taken by the SIT.
Narratives are being allowed to fester and grow.
To fester, then, irresponsible police officers leaking selective evidence saying, oh, there was no semen found, but not owning up that the swabs were taken after 8 days.
Correct.
When the girl had been cleaned, had been washed in the hospital by the doctors. So, till the courts don't step in, it's quite clear that in Uttar Pradesh, from top to bottom, there is a huge involvement of the civil administration, of the political establishment, and of the police to cover up this case, to turn the complainants and victims either by fear into silence or somehow by a false narrative into the accused. And if the Honorable Supreme Court does not either supervise this investigation itself or appoint an SIT of persons who don't have anything to do with Uttar Pradesh and whose credentials are absolutely sacrosanct.
Correct.
This investigation is never going
All
to
right.
see, the light of day. I just want to say one more thing, Sarah, that, you see, this is the foundation for further and newer offences. Because in India, women are faced with double violence. One is the violence of the state, and second is the violence of antisocial elements who, because of their caste or their religion or their proximity to the establishment, think they are above the law. And if the judiciary, which is our only savior left, it's our only hope, if they don't step in strongly to punish not only police officers who are allowing this to happen, but also make an example of state administrations which are facilitating this, then we women have no chance.
Yes.
And the Dalits and minorities, I mean, it's a free for all.
Correct.
So,
all right.
This is a double
Lalita
jeopardy.
Kumaramangalam, Nandita Rao making it clear she's not, being wishy-washy here. She's saying the courts have to step in. It is a responsibility of the courts. They owe it to this child, that her story be told, the real story be told. They owe it to this family. Where do you think the NCW needs to do more on this? She's talked about narco tests. Why ask the family of the victim to take a narco test? Is the UP government, the BJP government, not believing the family now?
Sarah, I'm not, I don't have the wherewithal to be able to comment on what the government does believe in or doesn't, or even what decision the NCW has taken, because I'm not, I don't belong to either of those, I'm not either in the
NCW. You're a member of the BJP.
Yes, but I'm not here to talk about this as a member of the BJP, and I made this very clear when I was asked to come on the show. I have worked with women since 1991. I have worked with a broad variety of women. I have seen the sort of violence that is perpetrated against women in this country. It is absolutely abominable and it is unacceptable. Now, unfortunately, we have violence that is going on, as you have stated at the beginning of your show, every 15 minutes, every half an hour. I mean, people are raped, people are killed, people are God knows what else. But the point is that I would like to agree with what the Honorable Justice said and the gentleman from who is retired from the police force. That in a sense, we are all responsible for what is happening today. There are too many gaps in the police system. There are too many gaps in the justice system. There's also a sort of cultural apathy towards women. You can call it patriarchy. You can call it, there are many words that can be used, but they just are words. There needs to be a deep and very extensive reform across society when it comes to the attitude that we have towards women. The cases we hear about today are the tip of the iceberg. Believe me, I mean, most rapes don't even take place in public. They take place well hidden behind the familial and cultural, sort of bars almost that we can never break. We can never even access those. Unfortunately, there are too many gaps in these systems. It's not just one system. I agree that in any state, regardless of which party is in power, when there are lapses, or this is much worse than lapses, the word that needs to be used is, when there are such mistakes made, whether deliberate or not, especially if they are deliberate, there has to be punishment that is meted out to them immediately. It can't wait, and a mere suspension of anybody, whether it's a bureaucrat or a policeman or a justice, somebody belonging to the legal system, that's not the point. There has to be much more comprehensive, immediate justice that is meted out. Insofar as this poor girl's dying declaration is being ignored from what I could see, or is not being believed, if what you say is happening, it is not correct. The court should step in at this point. But the problem is that the court cannot also step in so many other cases which have not come to light, which have not come to the media, and which are probably in many ways as bad, if not worse than this. And that is what is the most disturbing thing in India today. That a few cases are
maybe so, but as of now, this has come to light, and this certainly, in this case, we need to keep following up with the question that will these men be convicted? Will her dying declaration be enough to convict the four upper caste men that she has named so far? Sunita Krishnan, please come in here. I want to pick up on something else that Nandita Rao mentioned. She said that the assaulters here think they are above the law. And I think what's really been interesting in this coverage, blanket wall-to-wall coverage on TV and reams of coverage in print of this whole case, is that we've only been focusing on the victim and the family. We have not mentioned at all who the accused are, who these men are who have carried out this horrific crime.
Sarah, first of all, I don't want to mention too much about this case because I'm so deeply shattered. Every time a case like this happens, everybody stands, they make a public spectacle of the victim and her family, and we happily forget the perpetrators.
Correct.
It happens every time, you know. And even in our interventions, in our responses, every time something like this happens, we're all running after the girls. Now, let's all teach pepper spray, you know, taekwondo, karate, everything to them. Nobody is talking about altering the mindset of the men. Are we investing even one damn rupee in altering the mindsets of men? Because if there is violence against women that is happening, it is the men, whichever caste they are, whichever religion they are, there are men. The second thing that I want to say is, you know, Lalita ma'am said it nicely, and I want to, you know, push that also. We are, you know, in many ways actually party to this crime, because while this Hathras case or the Nirbhaya case or the Disha case is well reported and it's a big media tamasha all over it, there are thousands of unreported cases,
yes,
that is happening within the family. You know, children are raped by their fathers, brothers, uncles inside the homes. Women are raped by their spouses. These unreported cases create two things for us. One, it suppresses the voice of the victim. And two, it creates a culture of perpetrators who believe that they can do anything and get away with it.
Yeah.
If you recollect, Sarah, in 2015, I had started the Shame the Rapist campaign,
yes,
where men not only raped, but they videographed the rape and they were disseminating it. And that is what, you know, it's a big slap on all our faces to say, perpetrators, we have created such a beautiful, you know, environment, enabling environment of impunity for them, that not only they do the act, but they flaunt the act and, you know, show it before it. The third thing that I want to say is, in this case itself, what is the accountability of stakeholders? Are we willing to look at them as abettors of this crime and book them as an aggravated form of crime? Or is it just some kind of suspension transfer and now everybody is happy from that end to this end? Okay, our dharna has done well, our media coverage has done well. When do we start fixing as the police officer from UP had said, you know, when do we start fixing accountability, yeah, on the duty bearers for not doing the thing? But more than that, for me, as somebody who has survived this experience, we don't even speak about victim witness support system. For this victim, there's some safety for her family because everybody's rushing to highlight this case. But yes, there are hundreds and thousands across the country who are sitting like beggars in the corridors of the court, not getting even 1.1 kind of either support or any kind of protection that they deserve. We do not have anything.
So even this family was denied access to opposition leaders, but at least in the end, that was where the sympathy was coming from, and they were denied that. But I want to just close with asking both Justice Bhalla and Nandita Rao, what does this mean now for the case? Because the body has been burnt, the vaginal swabs were conducted 11 days or 8 days after the crime, questions being raised about whether this last statement is a dying declaration, does it carry weight? What does this mean for the case, Justice Bhalla, first? Is it,
can I come in, please?
Go ahead.
If there is a dying declaration and recorded in accordance with law, and we have a medical report, then I think we have a good case that can lead to a conviction. Now, the entire thing would be the integrity of the investigation, which takes place now. The statements of the parents, like, I'm horrified to know that somehow the SIT wants to record the statements of the parents. I mean, this is unheard of, that.
And not just a statement, they want a truth test.
Yeah, so I mean, that's unheard of, that the accused is being asked to record it even without arresting and getting hold of, the complainant, getting hold of the accused. So, and you've got to all be very conscious of late, there's been a trend where the judiciary has almost become the whipping boy of everybody. So everything that lands up has to come to the judiciary. You all seem to forget that what comes to the court or what comes to the judge's plate is an investigation. And when this will go at the subordinate level, there's very limited power for the magistrate,
yes,
or the judge to order further investigation. It's a very limited power.
Yes.
So therefore, what we've got to ensure is that at the initial stage, when a victim comes to hospital or comes to the police station,
so you have to ensure that the investigation has been carried out properly before it comes before a judge,
yes,
because the judge can only rule on the findings of the investigation. So Nandita Rao, going by that, is it too late now? The body has been burnt, the evidence has been burnt, it's now just ashes. The family's right to a second post-mortem can now never be met. Is it too late now?
No, I think, sir, the Honorable Justice Bhalla has very rightly pointed out that the case is still very strong. But if the investigating agency, the so-called SIT, is going to spend its energies to undermine and manipulate the evidence against the complainant, then obviously, it's going to further damage the case from what it has been damaged already. But what I would like to say here is that sir is very right that, you know, we are all complaining against the judiciary. But that is because we still have hope in our judiciary. We still have faith in our judiciary. Because you stop complaining against somebody.
Support the judiciary.
We stop complaining against... Sorry. The sir wanted to say something.
I had to intervene because I may not get a chance. So I'm saying don't complain. Support the judiciary. Empower the judiciary. Strengthen the judiciary. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes, sir. I fully agree with you. As ordinary citizens of India, our only hope now is the judiciary, because we are crushed between a completely politicized investigation agencies from CBI downwards and a completely anarchistic society where a particular religion or a particular caste base thinks that they are above the law because the political establishment is pro them.
Yes.
So our only hope is the judiciary, and like children who only complain and fight with the mother, they are not much bothered about the father. We only complain to the courts and we fight with the courts and we cry to the courts because we only have hope in our courts. We only have faith in our courts. And every time our courts step in and some semblance of justice comes, as was in the previous case also from UP, where that girl's father had been killed in an accident, the girl had been attacked, and then, you know, the Honorable Supreme Court transferred the case to Delhi and it came with a conviction. So as women and as ordinary citizens, we felt hopeful. And so therefore, it is not that we want to browbeat our judiciary. They are our only hope. If we don't have a judiciary, we have nothing. Then we are at the mercy of, our autocratic power.
Yes, correct.
So I'm very, very enthused when Honorable retired judge of a court says that,
all right,
yes, this case can still go to conviction. And
all right, let's hope.
Let's
hope,
Sarah,
that's the case. And the truth of the story, this young child story, does get heard, because as of now, it is there's an attempt all around to silence her voice. We'll try and give it a platform here on NDTV at least. Thank you all our guests, all our panelists tonight for joining us. Bye-bye.